Good evening and welcome, everyone, to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael. Glad you could be with us this evening. We have a lot of football talk, NFL and high school talk, and also some Major League Baseball playoff conversations coming up over the next 60 minutes. We have some great guests lined up. We hope you participate in the program through the various methods. And, of course, we'll introduce the leading co-host of the program, all excited about the Major League Baseball playoffs, senior sports writer at The Morning Call, Mr. Keith Groller.
Keith, excited? It's the month of October. I don't know if they can see it. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
I know, exactly.
And there's a lot of pink. It's going to be out there on the NFL uniforms. October means so many different things. Halloween, baseball playoffs, changing colors with the leaves. But it's a great time of year. Really is a great time of year. The football games get that much more meaningful on all levels, really.
Yeah. And you're excited about the Cardinals? Oh, wait a minute. They're not. Oh, they didn't make the playoffs.
Your Phillies embarrassing didn't make it either. Phillies didn't make 20 under 500, right. By the way.
Well, we'll still talk about the teams that actually made the postseason coming up a little later in our program. Right now, though, it's Eagles talk, and we bring in the voice and Mr. Eagle at The Morning Call and, of course, everywhere online as well, Mr. Nick Fierro. Nick, thanks for coming back on Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call.
I'm glad to be back.
I know you're caught up in Wentz mania and Wentzylvania and everything that's out there, so I want to try to be objective here and not get too caught up on them. But can you answer today or on Monday? Will Wentz be the greatest quarterback in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles?
I mean, I'm not answering it today, and I'm not answering it Monday.
But listen to the fans, though. They're saying this is the guy that's going to lead them to multiple Super Bowls. Are you surprised even the Philadelphia fans are caught up in
this? I am. No, not really, because they were on it from the start. They wanted this. The fans wanted this trade to go down. They wanted Wentz. They didn't want no parts of Sam Bradford. And as soon as he came to town, he was embraced, but he's done way better than I think most people could expect. Me too. He's been really poised, really savvy for a rookie, and I think he only gets better. I mean, he's going to have some burps. He's going to have some setbacks. He could throw a pick six on Sunday, the first possession, they could be down, but he's really just a grounded guy, and he's not going to let it get to him either way.
You both have interviewed him, so I'm curious. You hear all these stories about he's in at 5:30 watching tapes. He's watching game footage on his phone with his girlfriend on a date. There was a report of that out there. Mm-hmm. But what is he really like, and what impresses you the most about him?
No, that's it. He really has football in his mind all the time, especially since he became a pro player. That's what he does, and he thinks about it. He visualizes game. When he's not watching film, he's got something going in his head. When he's driving down the road, it's still dark out when he's coming to the premises. He's got that stuff going in his head, and he goes to sleep dreaming about it. How do you not like that? And plus, he's a spiritual guy. I had a story on that this past week. He's part of that Bible study, and he's really, really into it. He's one of the big participators, and he has a couple of tattoos to prove it. Mm-hmm. So he plays for the Lord, but he doesn't flaunt it. Yeah. And he's really kind of the perfect to compromise that way. He's not rubbing anybody the wrong way. Some people kind of get turned off by that if you're always praising the Lord. He's not always doing that, but he does. That really is a priority for him.
He's a country music fan, which I like being on. I'm a big country music fan. How do you think I feel? I'm a Rams fan. The Rams also like kind of mortgaged the future.
Yeah, you could have had him. What was up with that?
To trade for the number one guy. And our guy can't even get on the field yet. And this guy who they bypassed is really looking solid.
You could have
really
Sam Bradford. Well. I would have been looking.
And at
nice.
Least the Eagles got rid of Bradford to get some of what they gave away. The Rams are really putting it all in the golf, and he's not even on the field yet. So, I think I agree with Nick. This guy has really exceeded expectations so far. He's obviously got a long way to go, but so far so good. And I think the fan base, Nick, is going to be very – after what they've been through with the Chip Kelly and all the highs and the quick high and the crash of Chip Kelly, the demise of Andy Reid and all the stuff that's transpired with this franchise and all the frustrations with Donovan McNabb, I think they're a little bit patient here, which is good because I think they're already exceeding expectations. And when you have a patient approach, even from a fan standpoint, and they exceed those expectations that you might have, boy, it's bonus time. It's gravy. It's icing on the cake.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are going to be some hard times. I mean, after this Detroit game, there's not one team on their schedule that has a losing record.
We had the perfect way to ease in, right? I mean, against the Cleveland Browns. Chicago Bears team. Yes, it was a Monday night stage, but the Bears aren't that strong. The Steelers was the performance. Now there was a banged up Steeler team, because I was reminded that when when people thought we were praising the Eagles too much, a couple Steeler fans reminded me that they were a very banged up football team. I don't care how banged up they were, that was an impressive performance in the last outing.
Especially considering what the Steelers did before and after.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They beat the Eagles. They pretty much handled the Bengals. And before that game, and then they came in. We saw what they did against the Chiefs Monday night. I mean, they didn't have Le'Veon Bell, but they had the NFL's leading rusher, and the guy that they plugged in for Le'Veon Bell, even though he was 75 years old, he was still getting it done. and it doesn't matter. They shut him down. They shut everybody down. They shut Big Ben down. The Steelers haven't really played that well in Philly for 50 years now.
You spent a ton of time down there. I've been really impressed just how he handles everybody. We had fast-talking Chip Kelly, who always reminded me of a used car salesman. He came in, talking real fast, and you didn't know what he was selling you. He was talking so fast all the time that, you felt like he was ripping
disclaimer.
You off.
Yeah,
like,
it was a disclaimer. Yeah.
I really like that he's a grounded guy. He's brought in a couple excellent coordinators. I think Frank Reich is doing a great job setting up Wentz that offense for success. Jim Schwartz is maybe the MVP. I mean, the defense is the key. I still think the defense is the key to this thing. Because I thought the offense was okay. I mean, you might disagree. I thought the offense was okay the last couple of years. But the offense, kind of their style, put the defense in a bind. But the defense didn't perform, especially like in 2014 down the stretch in those big games when they had that tough losing streak. I think the defense, this defense can hold together, Nick. I think they can be a playoff. I hate to say it, but I think they could be a playoff team this year.
I think they can win the division. Winning in the playoffs, I'm not seeing that yet, but that's a big next step. They haven't done that for a while. We're going on 10 years now, close to that. But they can win the division. But I do think the defense will need that kind of help that they've been getting. They've been on the field for less play. It's remarkable. They went from being a team that played the most snaps in the NFL to the least in one offseason. Yeah. And I know that has to do with the fact that they're getting off the field on third down, but Billy Davis's defense got off the field on third down a lot too, but they were back out there, 35 seconds later, and that takes its toll. Yeah. And I don't care what I thought the offense was the undoing of the Eagles. I'll say of Chip Kelly's Eagles. I'll say that. I'll never switch from that. I don't think it was the defense at all. I think that was a byproduct. It let them down because of what the offense did.
The offense kind of led the offense not get, with their fast-paced style, they put the defense back on way too quick. And that does take a toll. I agree.
Last year's defense with this year's Eagles offense would have been just as good. That's my theory.
I think Schwartz is doing a heck of a job.
I do too. Nothing. I'm not taking
doing a far better
against,
job than Billy Davis.
But they had
did.
They had guys that were playing at a high level. Then they got injured too. But you take that the defense that they had in the first half of last year and put them on this year's team playing the same system, the 3-4, whatever they do, the press man, that would be just as good as this one or close to.
It's hard to say anything after three games.
I don't think they would not. Yeah, I think that had a lot to do with, way more to do with it than the fact that they had a couple of cornerbacks who weren't there. Because this team has the same thing too. They gave up some big plays too, but they really hold it down.
I thought the key to that whole game was holding the Steelers out, and then they get the bonus.
Yeah, the block field.
And that set the whole tone for the whole game. I thought. I disagree. I think the Eagles' defense is much better, and I like Schwartz way better than Billy Davis. I just want to be on record.
I've always been
a 4-3
like
guy.
Too.
I've always liked the 4-3.
But I'm not ready to go there and say that this guy couldn't get it done. If they would have had – and you see what Chip does this year, by the way, at San Francisco? I know they've struggled, but they blew out the Rams the first week. They have a chance to be good. Chip has changed that offense. He still doesn't huddle, but they run that play clock down to almost zero every snap. He's learned. And they make adjustments before the snap. Once he gets the talent back on that team, they have a chance to win.
We've reached our Chip Kelly limit. You're bringing me down here after all this Wentz mania here. I did want to mention, Keith talked about the coaching staff. McElvin, you mentioned, is coming back this week. They've basically been playing with like three defensive backs the last couple of weeks.
Three corners.
they have the empty backfield they come out with on Monday Night Football. Could you talk a little bit more about the coaching and how everything's kind of come together? And I think the question after that is, everyone agrees Jim Schwartz has done a great job. Is he going to stick around after this year, or is it going to be he's going to do such a good job, he's going to be in high demand, and he's going to have to get a head coaching job somewhere else?
Yeah, I would imagine he would get, if they keep this up, he's going to get a head coaching job. But I think what's happened was, you know, they were down. I could have sworn they were going to make a roster move. I kept asking Doug every day, you know, make a roster move. You know, nah. So, I mean, they went with Jalen Mills. He was their third cornerback, the third healthy cornerback. And, of course, he gave up a big play every week. But he would end up recovering. You know, he wouldn't take it with him, you know, into the locker room at halftime or whatever. He'd come back out. He's the leading tackler on the team right now. Yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing to have a corner.
No.
But the fact is, he's more than just a willing tackler. He's an able tackler. They run at him. They can't run at him. And he gets guys down. If he keeps guys in front of him, he gets guys down. He's a capable cornerback. And now he won't play as much probably with McKelvin in there. So they have a chance to be maybe even better with a veteran in there. So, but I still think he's earned. He's done enough in that to earn his way into a rotation, play more. Now it's just a matter of, you know, what else do they do? I think it goes week to week what kind of package they want to put in there. Based on what the offense is doing.
Speaking of week to week, what's the status now? Lane Johnson waiting for his appeal. Looks like now he's going to play this week, but then I think the Eagles would hope at least it would get reduced to 8 games, or you said before we came on the air, maybe even 6 games, which would bring him back a whole lot sooner than originally thought.
Yeah, it's definitely – he's going to get a suspension from what I'm hearing for sure. There's no way to beat it, but they're very hopeful that it's going to get reduced somehow, even if it's just 2 games from 10 to 8. But the decision won't come until after this Detroit game. That's why he's been practicing all week with the ones. And then it becomes pretty interesting what direction they go after that, because now there's a change in Doug Peterson's plan. He was going to put Alan Barber from left guard out to right tackle and plug either Stefan Wisniewski or Isaac Simalo into the left guard spot. Now he's saying that Big V, and I can't pronounce the kid's first name, their draft pick, fifth-round draft pick, Vitae, is his last name. He might be the guy that just goes out the right tackle, and they keep Alan Barber at left guard because Barber's playing so well at left guard. Why mess with two positions? And they feel that Vitae's made such progress, and he has, from my perspective, from watching him. I don't know if he's ready to handle that, but he has made a lot of progress from the time. When I first saw him in training camp, I'm thinking he's going to have a tough time making the team. He's got practice squad written all over him. Yeah. Now he's being considered for a starting spot.
Yeah. And you had a great article earlier this week on how he kind of progressed from being a project to now being maybe the starting lineman for the Eagles as early as the following week.
Yeah. It's really amazing how far he's come. And same thing with Isaac Simalo. He missed the whole offseason. He had that goofy NFL rule where you can't be with the team if your class hasn't graduated. So they had to Skype with him. I don't care what you do. I know they have all this technology. They Skype with him every night. Skype doesn't equate to being there.
Yeah.
But he caught up right away. And that absence never affected him.
Yeah. One other player I want to ask you about before we get to trivia. Jordan Matthews. I thought a couple years ago he was going to be a great elite wide receiver. He's still having the issues with the drops. Where is his ceiling? Do you think he can be a better than average wide receiver? Is this the kind of guy we're always going to see? A lot of good plays, but, you know, occasional drops, especially in clutch situations. Where is his ceiling, do you think, is going to be?
I think he's a better than average wide receiver already, and I think he will get better. I think it's pretty ironic. He wears the same number that T.O. wore, right? 81.
There's more bad memory.
T.O., remember T.O. early in his career? I think he went maybe 5 years with the Niners for his first 5 years. He had that reputation too.
Drops.
Really good receiver. He would drop the ball at the big times. So, you know, you couldn't depend. But you knew he was just so good. He just kept coming and coming and coming. That's what Jordan Matthews is.
Yeah.
He's T.O. I don't know that he's going to be the same kind of have the same kind of success as T.O. But he has that same drive
potential.
He's just going to keep coming at you. So yeah, I predict big things for him.
Our special in-studio guest, Nick Fierro, Eagles beat writer for The Morning Call. And we're going to continue that conversation in just a moment. Right now it's time to unveil our trivia question and give you a chance to win tonight's prize. It does involve the NFL and more specifically the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll go back in time a little bit, test your memory. or test your Google Drive speed and ask you, who did the Eagles trade to acquire Ron Jaworski? Who did the Eagles give up to acquire Ron Jaworski? Here's more information on how and what you can win.
Certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months, but if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority, but if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
And that question one more time, who did the Eagles trade to acquire Ron Jaworski? Keith is already ripping me, saying it's too hard. No one's going to get it. But
without the Internet, of course, the Internet's the all equalizer.
No, people won't cheat out there. I trust people. They won't even dare go into their Internet. Speaking of wide receiver, that was one of the big question marks I had coming in. Where do you see Nelson Aguilar and some of the other guys as far as stepping up? And can they get through this season? I would think that's got to be one of the targets in the offseason to try to upgrade. But can they, assuming they make the playoffs and they win the division, which I have already assumed at this point, do you think they can get through and maybe win a playoff game with these core wide receivers?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about winning a playoff game, and I don't know that that would have to do with the wide receivers, although they would be pretty much at the top of the list because you just don't know yet. Nelson Aguilar is one of those guys that's kind of like Jordan Matthews. He really is a hard worker. He's going to keep going. He has some drops, but he seems like he's getting a little bit better. Dorial Green-Beckham is kind of the X factor here. Yeah. They acquired him. He had a reputation for a real poor work ethic in Tennessee and maybe not the brightest guy. They're bringing him along slowly, but they're giving him some packages where he can make some catches. You see how big and tall and fast he is. He's got all the tools in the world. And then Josh Huff, who, you know, if they utilize him the right way, I still think he's the most explosive offensive player on the team. More so than Darren Sproles. Who I think has lost a step, by the way, even though he made that big play last week. Eventually he's going to explode too, I would think. You just stick with him. These guys keep coming at you. They're not dogs. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The fans like to ride guys, especially a guy like Josh Huff, you know.
Yeah.
But he keeps bringing it. He's kind of a different cat. But these guys bring it. Him, all the wide receivers, real hard workers, and they're not to be denied, I'm thinking. If they don't succeed, it won't be because of anything. It'll be because they just maybe don't have it. But I think it's too early to give up on these guys.
Yeah. And that's an encouraging sign because people like the blue-collar mentality of the Eagles fans. So if they're working hard, even if they're not thrilled with guys like Josh Huff, if you're saying they're working hard, they're trying to improve, when you see them in the practice fields or away from the spotlight, that's another encouraging sign for this team, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And even Dorial Green-Beckham, I think maybe they've gotten to him and they've gotten it into his head that he's got to be at work every day and really going hard. I think they like what they've seen from him so far.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Richie from Easton would like to make a sports comment. Richie, welcome to Sports Talk.
How you doing?
Good, Richie. How are you?
Okay, I know you guys have been around and been watching a lot of ball games, but my question is, did you ever think you'd live to see the day that basketball shorts would be longer than football pants? And with all the knee injuries, why are football pants so short, exposing the danger to players' knees, which are vulnerable? What happened to the knee pads that I wore in 1958 in high school? What happened to those pads? Thank you.
That's a good point, Richie.
I never thought about that, ever.
That's a great question. And I can answer a part of that. I had a conversation a long time ago with Sheldon Brown, the former Eagles cornerback. This goes back to the spirituality thing, and he brought it up to me. I said, how come you don't wear – he wore the minimum number of pads, and he didn't wear knee pads sometimes. And I said, why do you do that? He goes, I just feel like I'm faster that way, and these guys want to be faster. And I said, well, what about protection? He goes, I count on the Lord to protect me. So there you go. I mean, I don't know that that's the reason why all these guys are doing this, but – we're seeing it more and more. And yeah, why you would never go out there with a knee pad or thigh pad, I can't.
The funny thing is with basketball, going back to basketball, remember, I think it was the Fab Five, Michigan
yes,
that started
they
wearing
revolutionized
that. And at first it was like, oh, what are they doing that for? I mean, but now it's like the norm. And now when you see that old footage back to when they had those really tight shorts, it looks really looks weird. It's funny how things have changed. And, it looks like inappropriate almost.
Oh, right. I mean, I like what the Fab Five did. I'm not so sure I like what the football's become with less pads. Yeah. But, you know, hey, it's whatever these guys. There's way more injuries today in football than there ever were in the NFL, by the way. And they keep practicing less and less, contacting less and less.
Well, that's a big part of it.
You know, you ever go to a state park and the Rangers tell you don't feed the wild animals, you're killing them? Same deal in football. These coaches think that they're helping the players by lessening the load, that by not having them hit in practice, they're killing them. Mm-hmm.
It's not only at the pro level, it's at the college and certainly at the high school level. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why we see, I don't know, scores like 62-45 occasionally, because people don't know how to tackle and don't know how to hit anymore.
They tackle these, even the Eagles. I mean, come on. They tackle these dummies. And then they land on pads. That's a complete waste of time. Mm-hmm. You could do that all. I don't care what kind of visualization you have. Do that all day. That's not going to help you at all. You might as well just watch video. I'd rather just watch video of a guy who lowers his helmet and try to figure that out instead of actually going out on the field and tackling some dummy. Doesn't work.
Lions are coming up this weekend. They're 1-3, almost in desperation mode. Rumors that the head coach could be on the chopping block if he doesn't get some wins in short order. Anyway, the Eagles are not 4-0 after this weekend. predicted that the Steelers were going to lose to the Eagles, as our camera person did here, who was bragging about it all week, but he won't come out here and say for himself. Are you coming out here? No? He's running away. All right. Well, Nick, you get credit for calling the Eagles' big win over the Steelers. Can they do it again and go to 4-0?
Yeah, I think they will. But it's going to be another close game the way I predict it. I mean, just like with the Steelers, I didn't see any of these blowouts coming, and I'm still not predicting the Eagles to blow out anybody yet. And especially a team like the Lions, who they will be at home. They might be playing for their season here. Yeah. And they still have some weapons on offense. If you let this game, if you're not really right on point defensively, they could put up 30 on you real quick. And so, I'm not really ready to. But, yeah, I'm going to pick the Eagles to win. They should win. It's Jim Schwartz is going to have a little something-something for them coming back. But at the same time, he still has a lot of great relationships with these guys, but he's going to want to beat them.
You think some of the guys will be motivated after it was the last Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think. But I think for the most part, they realize this is a whole different scenario here now. It's a whole different coaching staff, a whole different defense and different mindsets. So I don't think they're really – the revenge is so much of a deal there. They're really just – a guy like Brandon Graham. Brandon Graham's from Detroit. Connor Barr was from – they like the idea that it's a homecoming for them more so than it's a revenge from last year.
All right. To Nick Fierro, Eagles beat writer for The Morning Call, our special in-studio guest. We're going to get back to the Eagles and NFL talk a little bit later in the program. Let's try to squeeze in one more caller here before we go to the break. Terry from Whitehall wants to take a shot at our trivia question. Terry, welcome to Sports Talk.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, Terry. How are you?
Real good. Enjoying the show.
Well, glad to hear that. You want to take a shot at our trivia question. Do you think you know the answer without looking on the internet?
I think it's Charlie Young.
There you go. See? Proven wrong again. Charlie Young, tight end.
I don't know if he was I'll take Terry at his word he didn't look it up in the internet.
All right.
What number did Charlie Young wear?
That's a tough one.
No, I think it was 80. I'm pretty sure
80
it was 86.
80-something.
Because I remember I'm a Rams fan, so we got him. We got him.
Great trade, wasn't it?
Well, Charlie Young was a hell of a tight end.
Yeah, and Young came back to the Eagles, I think.
He was all right.
Yeah.
He was okay.
I really liked Young.
But Jaworski took their team to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
I guess eventually Vince Ferragamo took the Rams. Actually, before Jaws, right?
Yeah.
The Rams played in the Super Bowl before
the year
the Eagles
before.
Did, right?
Yeah.
79, right? So
right.
It worked out.
Terry, you an Eagles fan?
Giants.
Oh, Giants fan. Okay.
My condolences.
Odell Beckham. Yeah. Odell Beckham is just going
on. Yeah.
All right, Terry, we'll be in contact with you after the show about the prize.
Okay, I appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks for watching us. And again, we're going to continue the NFL talk in just a few minutes. Some MLB playoff talks also coming up in just a few minutes. But our first break of the evening, and it's been a very busy week for local girls tennis in the District 11 region. with a tournament in full swing this past week. Sports Talk videographer Mike Kingsley caught up with some of this week's top performers.
Well, I mean, it's an honor to be able to play against so many good players and be on the same courts as these girls at the same time.
Some strategies I was looking for today was just to, like, play my game, really. And I think, like, I play best with, like, power shots and just going for it. So I think I played, like, aggressive today, and that's what I was looking to do.
My season has been pretty well. I only lost twice, and it's been pretty good. As a team, I think we lost two of our best players. So I think keeping that in mind, I think we did really good.
Individually, this has been the best season that I've ever had. I went undefeated this season, which I haven't done before. And as a team, our team right now is 16-0, and we have a tiebreak match today, so we might be 17-0, so hope for the best. But I think it's been a great season for me and for the team.
I've had a good season so far. I've lost like three matches, so I've had a pretty good season. As a team, in the Colonial League, we were undefeated, so that was nice. And going into districts, we're hoping to win districts, but we got some tough competition. As a team, I think we should be pretty good. Becca's also going to be very hard to beat, so.
I want to make it to the finals this year as well, like maybe possibly win it, and just like work hard. I've been working really hard, so I think that I can do it this year. And also for team districts, I think we have a good chance of winning that as well.
Well, I mean, this year was the best year ever for our girls Salisbury team. It was so much fun. We went in this is my senior year as a freshman. We went in winning a few games, maybe like three or four, and now we're ending with a winning record of 13-5. So it's just like a complete turnaround, and our team just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
My goal for the next few weeks is to get as far as I can in the district tournament and the EPC tournament and just play my best, because when I play my best, then I will be happy win or lose.
Individually, it's a lot better than I could have ever imagined. To lose districts in the first round last year and go to be the first seed this year is just crazy. So it's just been a really fun ride.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Joined by Keith Thriller, our special guest, Eagles beat writer Nick Fierro. We're going to talk Major League Baseball playoffs in just a few minutes. Right now, let's go to our high school football poll for the week. It's been certainly one of the more wild seasons as far as trying to predict who the top teams are, 1 through 5. In fact, the last couple of years, I think probably in your poll at The Morning Call as well, Parkland's kind of been the universal choice from top to bottom. But as of this week, Emmaus is the unanimous choice. All 10 of our voters voted for the Hornets. They have 50 votes. Parkland, pretty much unanimous number 2 with 40 votes. Then things got interesting. A lot of people not quite sold on Whitehall, Liberty, or Freedom. People voting in different orders. But Whitehall got the most bids of those three teams with 19. Liberty had 16 total votes. Freedom had 14 votes. And then Pleasant Valley and Stroudsburg got at least one vote apiece. You can go to our website for more information on how we arrive at the numbers and who votes. But Keith, it's kind of been a fun season in that you don't have that one dominant team. And it's been fun to follow Emmaus because they've been putting up some very impressive
performances. There's a good reason they're number one and unanimous number one at that, because they're the only undefeated team left in the EPC. Of course, Notre Dame now is the only undefeated team left in the Colonial League. Yeah. I'm glad we did not jinx. I've been accused of jinxing a few people over the years, and I'm glad that the Crusaders one night after being here, they went out and won again. But again, Notre Dame keeps struggling. But look at that 6A, that 5A, it's going to be a lot of fun to follow. I'm more focused on who's not going to get in than who is going to get in. I think you're going to see a lot of great matchups repeat. Mm-hmm. If I'm a Liberty or Freedom, I'm like, hey, let's just get in this thing. Let's get enough to get in, and let's start playing good football when the playoffs arrive. I know you can't turn the switch, but I wouldn't panic if I was a Liberty or a Freedom. Now, Easton's got to worry.
Yeah.
Easton's at 2-4.
And
but with there's eight teams, so they could still lose a game or two and still qualify.
Well, I think 5-5 will get you in.
Yeah.
I think 4-6 probably not, but 5-5 will likely get you in. And then all of a sudden, Nazareth back at 3-3, and then that's the game I have tomorrow night. Nazareth going over to Emmaus. And while Emmaus is playing good football, and they've certainly been very impressive, they're finding ways to win, they're not a perfect team. They're a flawed team, like everybody is. And I wouldn't be surprised if Nazareth gives them quite a game on Friday night.
All right, let's take a look at the small school poll. And as Keith mentioned, Notre Dame did win, but Becca continues to be our number one team. They had 44 of the total votes, all but one first place votes, one person sticking with the Vikings. So they were second with 34 total votes. Notre Dame is third with 26. They are still undefeated in the Colonial League. And then Northwestern, with their big win over the Panthers, ties themselves with Saucon Valley, 15 votes apiece. Penargel did get one vote, but the Tigers with an impressive win. And I said on the blog the other day, I thought the Tigers were probably a year away. They had that freshman quarterback who looks really good, but
he's set all the records up there, yeah. No question about it.
I thought he was a year away. I thought the team was a year away from a big win, but they got a statement win. They can now be one of the top, you know, you look at the rest of the schedule, they can be one of the top teams in the Colonial League this year. And Cunningham's a great player. They lose him to graduation, but they got a lot of people coming back. So Northwestern's going to be a team, probably one of the most dominant teams in the Colonial League for the next few years.
You know, Josh Schneider's doing a great job up there. But I think if you talk about Coach of the Year candidates, and there's been several great candidates, certainly Harold Fairclough. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, looking at that poll, you have to put Kyle Hawes, who has, I guess, still got that interim tag in front of his name. A lot of people thought that when Becca made that switch from the north to the south, that, oh boy, let's see how they can handle this. Well, so far, I know that they have some tough games remaining.
Parkland
and
this week.
Including Parkland this week. But there's a lot of people who really doubted that they could even be where they are right now, which is a 5-1 football team with only a close loss to Emmaus on their resume. He's done a heck of a job over there, and I got to give him a lot of credit. It's not easy to come in there on an interim basis, and he's got them believing that they can match up with anybody. And there's a lot of fire, there's a lot of passion with that Bethlehem Catholic football team right now.
And unlike Central Catholic, that was in the South the last couple years, they had to fight to get in. Once they got in, they had the proven track record. They played tough teams, so they had that advantage heading into the playoffs if they got in. Becca's almost assured to be in at 5A, at 4A now, and they're more battle-tested too, so they can have a nice run in the playoffs.
The interesting thing, Chris, is I've been saying all along that the playoffs are no longer for the truly good. They're for everybody but the truly bad. Yeah. But the one classification where there are going to be some good teams left out is 4A. Right. Becca and Central will likely have a spot. Yeah. There's two good teams from up the line, Blue Mountain and Pottsville. They're legit. And, of course, the two we were just talking about. I believe Saucon Valley and Northwestern are in 4A.
They're tied.
Somebody's not going to make it. Obviously, one or two of those teams are very, very good, and they're not going to make it. That's the one. That's the one classification where you say, boy, you maybe wish they had an additional spot or two. The rest are like, to many people, a lot of people think there's too many people going to the playoffs, and we're going to get some 5-5 teams in there. And then 5A, where everybody's going, East Stroudsburg South is 1-5. They've lost 4 in a row, but hey, no problem. They're going to the postseason.
Wouldn't that be like a doomsday scenario if a team like that goes 1-9, makes the playoffs,
and then wins?
And then at least advances to the championship at a 1-9 record.
You know, I had that. I go back to my Dearth roots, and back in basketball, 1978, they went to an open tournament, and Dearth had a great team that only lost one time, and they had an open tournament, meaning everybody got in, and Dearth had a night of sickness. I know it sounds like I'm making excuses, and they lost to an 8-16 Northampton team. Dearth just had a very bad night. Northampton probably didn't belong in the tournament, but yet they won that game at Muhlenberg. Tony Hamill, he came in with that Jimmer Fredette's team. Yeah. From Glens Falls, and he was the guy that made the free throws at the end. It was one of the classic upsets in District 11 history. So I remember it can happen. Now, that's a different sport. That's a different sport. But you could have a rainy night, turnover prone. It could happen where a bad team beats a good team, and then there'll be a little embarrassment, I think.
All right, it's time in our show where the co-host takes center stage and talks about anything and everything on his sports mind. We tentatively call it Growler's Grumblings, although that's still a work in progress. I'm trying to come up with a fancier name, but either way, Keith, take it away.
Well, I got a couple things, and one, Nick was talking about the injuries, and injuries are a concern. more than ever in football. But I also believe that with the technology and some of the protocols that are in place, I think it also is safer than ever in the sense that if you're going to get hurt, you're going to get well taken care of, and we're not going to just send you right back out in the field with a what do they call it? Get your bell rung. I guess get out
How
there, kid. You just got your bell rung.
Yeah, right. That's those days are over.
Those days are over, and that's a good thing, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm happy that more people are still embracing, because I think football generally is under siege, and more people are sending their kids to soccer, where you can also get hurt, or lacrosse. And I heard that Alvernia, a small school near Reading, they are going to begin football. Most people are dropping football. They are beginning football beginning in 2018 at Command Alvernia. I also want to mention that basketball already underway in some shape or form. The colleges are going to begin practices very soon. In fact, I'm headed over to Northampton Community College after our show tonight. And there's a big shootout this weekend at Muhlenberg College, 32 teams, a lot of the great local teams involved. And also one quick note, Bob Roth, a friend of mine who was a member of the Parkland Trojan Alumni Club. Bob was a guy who loved Parkland sports. Didn't matter. If it was 30 degrees, he'd still be at a football game. If it was 90 degrees, he'd still be at a softball game. Bob Roth, a great, great guy. It goes back to the old tradition when you didn't have necessarily a family member in a sporting event. You just wanted to support your team, your alma mater, your community team. We don't have enough of those people anymore. Sadly, Bob Roth died earlier this week, and I just wanted to say my condolences to him, his family, to the Parkland alumni group, a very strong group. They've done a lot of good work out there, and we'll miss Bob Roth quite a bit.
I got it. Knicks Fury. Knicks, because you got to tie in with the Avengers. And Nick, do you like that? Knicks
sure.
Fury? Keith Sigmund, do you like that name?
I like it. That's beautiful. Beautiful.
There you go. All right.
Pharaoh's Fire. How about that?
No, it doesn't have the same ring to it. We were hoping to be joined by MLB.com's Bill Latz, and we're still trying to get him on the phone right now. But our old friend Cole Hamels struggling today, just talking a little Major League Baseball talk. Cole Hamels gives up 7 runs in 3 innings today. I thought this baseball playoff so far was very entertaining. Madison Bumgarner with another great performance the other night, pretty much single-handedly defeat the Mets in that one-game playoff. I know you guys have kind of mixed feelings about that one-game playoff. And, you know, the Orioles, of course, got burned. Buck Showalter with a bonehead move the other night, not putting in his best pitcher with an ERA under 1 because he was, quote, holding him for a save situation that, of course, never materialized. But again, one game and out in that wild card playoff. So what are your thoughts on that one game wild card?
Yeah, I don't like it. I mean, I've never liked you want to expand the playoffs, you know, shorten the regular season. But, of course, baseball will never do that.
No.
And so these one game, you know, come on. I don't think you play 162 games in baseball, and now all of a sudden, you know, teams that have really kind of busted their humps to get there, and maybe, you know, does a thing. Look at the Mets, what they did to get in. Yeah. Now all of a sudden they got to go against Madison Bumgarner. It's one and
it's
done.
Tough.
And that, you know, I'm not a Mets fan. I could care less. But you know, come on.
But I will say this: I agree with you. It's not fair to the teams about who worked so hard.
Yeah.
From April, I agree with that. But it does create that kind of feel like you have with the NCAA tournament. NCAA tournament's not fair in a sense either.
Well,
I mean, because. You know, you get a 16 seed maybe knocking off a 1. I guess it hasn't happened yet. But we've seen 15 beat 2s and so forth. And you say, well, one game, anything can happen. But it's kind of what makes it so compelling, I think.
Yeah,
I think
baseball more so than any other sport. It's just you need more than one game. You know, so much of it is tied to, you know, a pitcher like Bumgarner. And, you know, things could go haywire. We saw that you see that a lot now in the playoffs with all these layers of the playoffs. How many, I just saw a stat last night. There's been 20 teams in the last 20 years that have won, in the last 20 years that have won 100 games or more. Only 2 of them have won the World Series. You know, so that's the Phillies being one of those that didn't win.
That's right.
They had the best
2011.
Team.
Yep.
They had the best team and they only won 2 postseason games. And the only team that could have beaten them was the Cardinals, a team that wouldn't have been in unless the Phillies went gung-ho in 15 innings
exactly.
to beat the Nationals or whoever it was.
Charlie Manuel should never have played the Regulars that last weekend.
You don't tank games, but you don't play that last 160-second game like it's the 7th game of the World Series.
Yeah.
And the one team that could beat them, and only in a 5-game series at that, they got the Cardinals. In against.
Yeah.
Chris Carpenter pitched the gem that night.
Yeah, and but if that game, if that's a seven-game series, there's no way the Phillies lose that. And they end up winning the World Series.
I could say that, but yeah. How do you know that? How do you know that? They went five and the Cardinals won. So yeah, I don't know.
They were just hitting their stride the in game five.
Okay, I gotcha.
All right, time for another break and time for an update on the DCIAA high school football standings in the Washington region and the latest news with our DKN Sports Minute.
This is a DKN Sports Minute. At the halfway point in the football season, let's take a look at the standings. In the Stripes division, the Cardozo Clerks lead their division over the Roosevelt Rough Riders and the struggling Bell Griffins. Despite key losses to Wilson and out-of-state Carrollton, Roosevelt is pushing hard and could be a threat in the playoffs. In the Stars division, the Blue Knights hold down the top spot over powerhouses such as the Wilson Tigers and the HD Woodson Warriors. The Dunbar Crimson Tide has picked up some steam and looks to be a contender before the season ends. Despite posting big points 3 weeks in a row, the Wilson Tigers find themselves in a three-way tie for second place in the division. This has been the DKN Sports Minute.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Tonight's show starring Nick Fierro, our Eagles beat writer for the Morning Call, along with Keith Groller and myself. Glad you could be with us this evening. And one quick email we'll get to before we get to the roundtable topics. And again, we were hoping to have Bill Ladson from MLB.com, but we're still trying to make connections with him. Question, though, involving former high school athletes from Travis. No town given. Does Parklands, Yaboa, or Cross dress for their teams?
I don't
think Yaboa is a Temple.
I don't think Devontae's
at Virginia.
Yeah, but I think the best thing that would happen for certainly Devontae would be to redshirt.
Yeah,
you know, and wait out a year and learn the game, and he's going to be a great fit down there. I believe. I think he's going to have a shot to play eventually at quarterback. He was not going to get a shot to play quarterback at Boston College, and that's why he changed course there.
Yeah, and I think he's a great quarterback. I like his decision making. I always liked it as a point guard, even when he was a sophomore. Mm-hmm. I think he grew into that role. I would have loved to see him play basketball too. But
and I'm going to mention something here that I would never mention in the office. But I don't want to knock anybody.
Oh, do tell
but
her.
But we do a coordinated health athlete of the year thing, and I believe it was Evan Culver, who's a very good guy and a very deserving choice. But to me, when you lead your team to four consecutive District 11 football championships, when you lead your team to four consecutive basketball District 11 championships, you should at least be at the banquet. And Devontae Cross, just because of this backlash against Parkland, Devontae Cross never got the we do a voting thing with the fans.
Yeah.
And Devontae couldn't even win. I must have nominated him five times, and he never got enough votes to be an athlete of the week, which then in turn get you invited to the banquet. So I just want to throw that out there. To me, he was the athlete of the year. He was just phenomenal.
Both were very special athletes, too.
Evan did, he had a father come in from across the country. It was a very nice night.
All right, time for the roundtable part of our show. The roundtable is where we have a variety of different topics that our guests do not know prior to their arrival in the studio. And as always, we look for an entertaining exchange of thoughts and opinions back and forth on these issues. All right, topic number one tonight. Ratings are down for both Monday night and Thursday night football. The Thursday night games usually are horrible each night, each week, week in and week out. Is it time for ESPN and all the respective entities out there to dump Monday night and or Thursday night football?
I'm all in favor of dumping Thursday night. I think I would keep Monday. I've never liked the Thursday night game. I just don't understand it. If football is a sport that's been, you play once a week, you disrupt the whole schedule for both teams, for a bunch of teams doing it that way. You give an unfair advantage then to the team that has to play the team coming off the Thursday night game a lot of times because it's kind of like a little mini bye week.
Yeah.
I hate it. Monday night's okay. Thursday night, get rid of it.
The games are pretty bad on Thursday.
I tend to agree. You're right, because of lack of preparation or whatever. Although I don't like Friday night college games. Mm. I mean, I don't like a lot of things that's going on, all the name of the mighty dollar as we get these TV contracts. I will say, though, the ratings might be down, but part of it's this weird political climate that we're in, where a lot of people are going to, I mean, the one game on Monday night was against the First Debate. So take it with a grain of salt. There's so many people talking about this election and the political stuff that I think that's affecting ratings, and more people are watching like cable news than ever before. And maybe next year they'll go back to just getting in on a Thursday night and settling in with their game or a Monday night.
Did you catch what ESPN did on Monday night? Because First Takes rating, that Stephen A. Smith show with Max Kellerman, their ratings are down too. So you have two shows with declining ratings, and they put Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith arguing in between the some of the Monday night football. Is that something that's going to bring in the viewers
No.
here?
I don't think so.
I don't think I'd be tuning in for that.
But I will say this. If they could bring Howard Cosell back from the grave, then the Monday night. Because, I mean, when I was a kid, and we're the same age, I was a young man, very young man when this first started. I mean, my parents would let me stay up to halftime so I could see the highlights that Howard would do. Howard Cosell, to me, is still the guy that made it all tick.
Yeah, it was really an innovative thing that right from the start, what they did. ABC Monday Night Football was tremendous. And that's why I say keep it, even though it's not what it used to be. But Thursday night, get rid of it. And I will say this, the political thing, we have time for that.
Sure.
Yeah, this is a really nervous country right now. The Trump supporters are real nervous about Hillary and vice versa.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are like, they don't like either one.
Let's make it for good drama, I'll say that.
Yeah, and they're everybody's kind of like nervous in this country. This is the most nervous election that I can sense since I've been on this earth.
All right, let's take one more break this evening, and then we'll come back with more of our roundtable topics. And our final break of the evening includes our final feature. The Saucon Valley girls soccer team handed Salisbury their first league loss on Tuesday. Sports Talk videographer Alyssa Scheckler was on hand for highlights and post-game reactions.
Season's been going really well, seeing as we weren't meant to make it very far, and now we're on one of the top teams. So
you can just see the strength of the Colonial League. We have so many good teams that it's difficult to go undefeated. It's difficult to win every game in the league, and we've just been really fortunate to have really good games against Southern Lehigh and Salisbury and get the W.
I think this game is a pretty important part of our season, and it will help us in our future games. It's always really fun to play against a really good team because it's a great competition, and it really helps you improve on your skills and your team skills.
Salisbury has definitely had a great season so far. They're a really tough team. It was really hard for us to break their back line. So to finally put one in so late in the game and get the victory is huge for our confidence and also for our position in the league.
Welcome back to the final segment of RCN Sports Talk. We do have Bill Ladson on the line from Nationals.com, MLB, a great writer who covers the Washington Nationals. Bill, sorry for the technical issues, but thanks for joining us this evening.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Bill, I know you've had a lot of injuries in Washington, especially Wilson Ramos, starting catcher, is a tough one right before the playoffs start. What's the momentum been like, even with all those injuries, after a great season? How excited are Nats fans for the playoffs to start tomorrow night?
Oh, they're very excited. It's just that they want to see the Nationals go past the first round, unlike the previous 2 years, and hopefully they can do that. I think it will depend on the starting pitching and the bullpen, because to me right now, in my opinion, they don't have a shutdown bullpen, and they got to get wins after Scherzer and Tanner Roark as well.
Mm-hmm. As far as Daniel Murphy, I heard he worked out, had a pretty good workout, but William Defoe was also added to the playoff roster, and the skeptic in me says, well, they probably wouldn't have added him if they had any doubts about Murphy's availability to play. So what's Murphy's status for Game 1, and is he going to play second, or there was some talk that they might move him to first base?
Well, the way I see it, he's going to be playing second base. Defoe is going to come off the bench. He's going to give them speed. You know, he can switch hit, so that helps. So I think part of it is that he's a switch hitter. If you look at the Nationals bench, they have a lot of lefties on that bench. So, you know, having Defoe there would definitely add some balance.
I think the Nationals, I'd feel better about their chances if Bryce Harper was hitting the way he was in the first half of the year as opposed to the second half of the year. What's been the story with him? Why has he struggled so much offensively, and do you think he can turn it around and carry this team if need be during the playoffs?
Well, as he says, you know, he's starting over. And, you know, why he's having this bad year, why he had the bad year, I really don't know, because it depends on who you talk to. You know, as you know, Tom Verducci reported that he was dealing with a bad shoulder, and then the Nationals come back and deny it. So, I mean, once this season's over, it wouldn't surprise me if we find out something was wrong with Harper's shoulder. So, I just think, hope that the postseason can really energize him and, help him do what he did 2 years ago.
You mentioned the bullpen. Dodgers have the advantage there. And elsewhere, I think you look around, it's a pretty even series matchup for matchup. Scherzer going in game one. What's your keys for this series? What do the Nationals need to do to beat the Dodgers in this first round?
I think they have to hit with consistency. And what I mean by that, they have to get key base hits with two outs. Mm-hmm. Dusty Baker has complained about that most of the season. And hopefully they can do that. I hope that the bullpen can do well. Because to me, it doesn't scare me. It doesn't scare me to the point where they were like the Kansas City Royals last year. Like in the seventh inning, you knew you were getting the Royals bullpen and the game was over.
Yeah.
So hopefully that could be the difference. And that's what I think are the keys.
Yeah. We only have a couple seconds here, but who do you like in this series? What's your prediction for Nationals versus the Dodgers?
You know what? I got to tell you, I got to go with the Dodgers. Dodgers in five, only because of their starting pitching. I think the Nationals' pitching runs a little short. And after Scherzer and Tanner Roark, you don't know what you're going to get. So I think it's going to be the Dodgers in five.
Yeah. Well, Bill, sorry for the technical issues, but thanks for joining us, and best of luck in your coverage with the Nationals.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Bill Ladson from MLB.com, Nationals.com. Nick, thanks so much to you as well. Good luck covering the Eagles. Hopefully another win this weekend. And Keith, we'll see you next Thursday night.
I can't wait.
All right. We'll see you next Thursday at 7 o'clock as well. For everyone at RCN, I'm Chris Michael. Good night, everyone.